Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to Intelligent Design the Future. This is Jay Richards with the Discovery Institute, and I'm joined for this episode with Father Michael Chabarek, who is a Dominican from Poland. He's actually a native of Gdansk, Poland, but he spent a year with us at the Discovery Institute in 2012 and 2013. I interviewed him for a previous episode about the fundamental incompatibility between theistic Darwinism on the one hand and the thinking of St. Thomas Aquinas on the other. In this episode, we're actually going to focus on the compatibility of intelligent design with Thomas Aquinas' thought, but I want to direct listeners to his website in which he deals with these issues in more detail, which is aquinas.design. That's Aquinas, AQUINAS.design. And there you will see articles about this subject, but also his two important books on this issue. One is Catholicism and Evolution. The other is Aquinas and Evolution. Father Michael, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me with you.
Well, your area of expertise is near and dear to my own heart because I have always found it somewhat strange when Thomists argue that intelligent design and Thomism are incompatible. At least from my long reading of St. Thomas Aquinas, I would expect it to be these ideas. They not necessarily be the same thing, of course. And so I'm pleased that you've spent so much time dealing with this. So let's start first with maybe just the definition of intelligent design, because I've noticed in reading the literature that sometimes Thomists who are critical of intelligent design don't actually define intelligent design accurately. So how would you define it?
Yes, I will immediately point to the problem which many Thomists, and not only Thomists, have with understanding intelligent design. Many of them say that intelligent design theory claims that the world, the universe, or biological beings are too complicated to emerge through random variation and natural selection. And then they show counterexamples of very, very complicated natural structures that actually we know that they came about through some kind of chance and necessity. But in fact, intelligent design says something different or something more, and namely that there are structures that are not only complicated, but they are also irreducibly complex, which means that they cannot come about through necessity and chance. There must be as the third force, we can call it intelligence, the force that has foresight. Because only this kind of power, namely intellect, can see the things ahead in such a way to put together a number of parts that will work towards one goal. And irreducibly complex systems are those that do not have function until they have all required parts, which means that they cannot be built step by step through blind processes. So intelligent design in a more general way will tell us that at least some elements of the visible universe, specifically living beings, at least some part of them have to be built or in their emergence, intelligence must be involved, not just necessity and chance, which was the Darwinian claim. And immediately we have to say that intelligent design doesn't say that everything is designed or that only intelligence works in the universe. No, intelligent design is more minimalistic, we could say. Intelligent design says that there are random events, there are necessary events, there is this cooperation of chance and necessity working in the universe. However, all of these, chance and necessity taken together, cannot account completely for biology, for biological realm. So we need to include the third factor, which is intelligence.
Yes, and this is how I tend to define intelligent design. It's just ultimately the claim that there's positive evidence for the activity of intelligent design, for teleology, in the natural world. It's not a fully sort of complex and fully robust philosophical theory. It's simply, in some ways, a kind of prediction about certain empirical discoveries that we should expect, that intelligence actually has some explaining to do in the natural world. And insofar as Thomas Aquinas adapted Aristotle's teleological view of nature, you would expect some kind of compatibility here. So I always find this sort of strange. But let's just go through the main argument.
Yeah, so again, we have to repeat that Aquinas didn't know modern science, whereas intelligent design is a theory that is possible only thanks to modern discoveries and modern biology. It wasn't possible in Aquinas' times. It simply, they didn't know things like irreducible complex system, biological systems. They didn't know microbiology. So the evidence for them was not there. However, I think the key to understand and acknowledge intelligent design is the distinction that many Thomists somehow miss in their studies, the distinction between natural science and philosophy. Because many Thomists and, let's say, classically minded philosophers take intelligent design as a philosophical concept and they judge it according to philosophical standards. And then they come with the conclusion, okay, it doesn't meet philosophical standards. The problem is that intelligent design stems from natural science, especially biology, and it remains within natural science and biology. And if we do not see the difference between science and philosophy, then we have very big difficulty to understand the nature of intelligent design, the place of this theory in our knowledge. And so if we judge intelligent design according to the standards of natural science rather than philosophy, we get it right. I mean, then intelligent design meets those criteria, okay? Because many, let's say, philosophers, Thomists, would say, for example, intelligent design doesn't take us to God, doesn't take us to ultimate causes of all nature. It doesn't say anything about God, or it shows, let's say, mechanistic view of God or reductionist view of God. All of this misses the point because intelligent design doesn't speak about God at all. It may be a conclusion. Assuming intelligent design in science, we may draw a philosophical conclusion based on this science of intelligent design that there is a God, and then we can build theology. But intelligent design itself doesn't speak about God. It just speaks about those three factors, chance, necessity, and intelligence. And it says that we have to adopt intelligence to explain a science. And if we see intelligent design as a scientific theory, we shouldn't have problem of a kind of competition between intelligent design and the Thomistic arguments for God's existence. Because some Thomists say that intelligent design is just an awkward or handicapped argument for God's existence that Thomas Aquinas delivered. Thomas Aquinas delivered those five ways how we can reach God in our thinking. Yes, these are not even, he doesn't even call them evidence, or he calls them actually ways, not even arguments. He says that these are five ways how our mind can go from the visible universe to God. Yes, and the fifth way has some similarity with intelligent design, because Thomas Aquinas says that in the universe, many things, natural things, act in such a way as if they had intelligence. So some things that naturally don't have understanding, they actually work in such a way as if they understood what to do. Yes, and he gives the example of the plants. Okay, the earth doesn't have eyes, doesn't have will. The sun doesn't have eyes, doesn't have wheel, or they don't know what to do, yet they, by their circular movements, the earth circulating the sun gives us many effects that are desired for the existence of the universe, civilization, biology, and everything. So they act as if they knew what to do. So Thomas says, since those things do not know it by themselves, there must be some intelligence, some mind that gave them this order. And that's why there must be this higher intelligence, absolute, and we call it God. That's his way of reasoning. Now, intelligent design doesn't take us there. Intelligent design is in science, so it looks for particular causes of particular effects. It doesn't speak about the absolute. It doesn't take us to the first cause. It doesn't take us to the ultimate explanation, this so-called arche, like the Greeks call it arche, so the arc of the whole nature. No, intelligent design, as it is in the nature of science, looks for particular causes of particular phenomena. And now, let's say we have bacterial flagellum, and we want to ask what caused production of this bacterial flagellum. And according to biologists who support intelligent design, it couldn't have been built by random genetic mutation and natural selection. There must be intelligence that would put the parts together. So it doesn't tell us anything about the ultimate cause, why bacterial flagella exist, what is their destination, you know. And it doesn't look for one cause of everything. And that's the difference with philosophy. So those two arguments, Aquinas' argument and ID argument, they do not compete because they are on different levels of knowledge. We could say that intelligent design is the introduction to philosophy as philosophy is an introduction to theology. So the understanding of philosophy as some kind of preambula to theology, like the introduction to theology, that's common. And classical philosophers, they know it. Yes, they call it, yes. Sometimes they call philosophy like a handmaid of theology. Yes, they would say that philosophical thinking prepares us for accepting theological truth, revealed truth. And I think that today, when sciences became so developed and they have so much to say and they have their independent subject and object, material object and formal object, they also can create an argument for design that will be like a preamble to philosophical arguments for God's existence.
Yes, because especially for scientists that are raised in a materialistic framework, to be able to develop even the tools to think about intelligence as a cause is a very good first step. Though, as you say, saying the bacterial flagellum has all the evidence of something that's designed by an intelligence because the thing looks like it was produced by a cause with foresight. That doesn't get you all the way to God, but it's certainly it's a step in the right direction, obviously.
Many Thomists and classically minded philosophers complain about modern science that it is materialistic, it's reductionist, and they lament how to break the naturalism of modern science, you know, but they somehow cannot see that the gate is already open, that intelligent design is this way how to break the naturalism and reductionism of modern science. And it's kind of logical that science will have some theory, one theory that will kind of connect it with philosophy. And at the same time, philosophy has all these so-called natural theology that opens it to supernatural theology. So all philosophical teaching about God prepares us to accept theological truths about the Trinity. And in the same way, science should have some kind of link or a window to philosophical thinking, and this is intelligent design. So I want to be clear that Thomas Aquinas does not know intelligent design, and obviously we will not find explicit endorsement of intelligent design in Aquinas. However, if we understand that science is different from philosophy, and if we take Aquinas' philosophical teaching, then, in my opinion, there is a perfect compatibility between these two levels. As science develops, grows, especially after in modernity, after Galileo and a little bit earlier, sciences have grown enormously. So they gained their independent subject and method, and that's why it is possible to expand the argument down to sciences, let's say the argument for intelligence.
Yes. What's curious, of course, is the kind of twofold complaint of some Thomists that intelligent design is mechanistic and reductionist and accepts the kind of mechanistic philosophy of natural science, while at the same time, the same thinkers can sometimes adopt Darwinism, which is the key, like the very best example of 19th century reductionist science. It's very perplexing. Well, let's just talk about this one final argument, because we often hear this from theistic evolutionists in general, but some Thomists who adopt Darwinian thinking, they accuse intelligent design of a so-called God of the gaps fallacy, in which we just sort of treat divine causality as if it's one among natural causes. This is such a common objection.
I've given a very acute answer in my book. Generally, I think that the accusation of God of the gaps is logically not quite coherent because, God of the gaps tells us that you cannot invoke God as a cause because over time we will find natural cause of the same event and then God will disappear. We will have to remove God from our understanding of the universe with the detriment for theology and faith and yes. religion. So they very often quote something like thunderstorms, let's say. That primitive mm-hmm. people thought that this is God who creates thunderstorms or eclipses. And then we found natural explanations, so God disappeared from our knowledge. And so God was like just a patch to cover our holes, in our gaps in our knowledge. And then he disappears and it makes religion not a serious explanation. Well, in this argument, the problem is that we actually have many things, especially we Christians, we believe in many things that do not have natural cause. And their ultimate cause is actually divine causality. Mm-hmm. Let's say the incarnation, the resurrection of Christ, the miracles, all of these. Exactly, exactly. So if you consistently 5, 000, apply yes, God of the Gaps argument, you would say, why do you believe in the miracle of multiplying of bread? Maybe in 1,000 mm-hmm. years, scientists will come up with some natural explanation. Then you will look stupid because you believed that it was a miracle, whereas it was just a natural event. But we see that this kind of thinking fails when we incorporate theological knowledge. We believe in the multiplication of loaves, that was a yes. miracle, because the Bible tells us so. And we take it by faith. And the same applies to, we could say, creation. The same applies to the future resurrection. All of these would be vulnerable to the argument of God of the Gaps. So God of the Gaps does not contain the criterion which gaps can be fixed by natural knowledge and which cannot in the future. So mm-hmm. in a way, we shouldn't adopt a supernatural explanation anytime. We should always follow natural explanation, which boils down to naturalism, which has nothing to do with Christianity or even any religion.
And so you're arguing that essentially for a Christian to use this objection is to prove too much, because it would essentially
exactly.
forbid us from ever saying that something is actually caused by God. That's the sort of irony of it. And of course, the historical stories are usually not themselves true anyway. I mean, if you actually look, at least in the history of Christian theology, it wasn't the case exactly. that theologians were attributing all sorts of things to God's direct causality. Maybe the Viking pagans were doing exactly. this with Thor and thunder, but it wasn't as if you know, there was a major theological argument in Christian theology for thunder. And so it ends up not even really being historically uh-huh. true. And the best example usually that I get when I press people on this is biological form. They say, well, we used to think God had created exactly. life, but now we know Darwinism is true. But of course, that begs the question of what the evidence of Darwinism is. And so we end up with not even any really good historical examples, but just simply from a theological standpoint, what we want to know is what are the criteria by which you would attribute something to.
And those criteria cannot come from science alone, because science cannot establish supernatural cause, so they must come from the revelation, and this is where the circle ends. But I would say even more. For example, let's imagine that medieval people actually thought that, let's say, planets are pushed by the angels because they didn't know gravity, okay? Then gravity came, mm-hmm. Newton came, so we removed angels from, let's say, moving the solar system or the planetary system, okay? So what happened? Nothing happened, because as long as we do not have natural mm-hmm. explanation, we can have supernatural explanation. It doesn't hurt religion if we discover natural explanation. I don't see this right. problem, which is so crucial for God of the Gaps. I mean, of course, if we had known before that there is a natural cause like gravity that moves planets, and after having known this, we would insert God mm-hmm. as if we would deny science, that would be a problem. But nobody does it, you know? That's not the Christian thinking, and even less intelligent design. Yeah.
No, that's right. I mean, right in Thomas Aquinas, he distinguishes between secondary and primary causes. He has the category that God can work through secondary causes in nature. He can also act directly. And so that, just for a Christian, at least, should always be an open question. Moreover, it's always possible God can act directly.
By the way, when you mentioned secondary causation, many Thomists would say that evolution is a better view of creation because this is when God uses a secondary cause, and secondary cause makes our picture of God so noble because God is using something less perfect to create something. Okay, that's true. But the problem is that Thomas himself teaches also that although secondary causation gives us a nobler view of God, the noblest view of God comes from his primary causation. So creation is still more perfect. Direct act of God is still more perfect than the act mediated in creation. So when God uses the secondary causes, which means that, yes, that's true. Thomas teaches secondary causation, but he doesn't make it better than primary causation.
That's right. And that's that. Yeah, sometimes in these cases, theologians are using theological categories to justify, I think, accommodating some materialist theory. And so they twist these things. And I think that's the case here. Well, this is very good stuff. And of course, there's a heck of a lot more I would like to ask you, but this is at least enough to whet the appetites of those who are interested and those listeners. So I'd recommend, again, your terrific website, Aquinas.design, to listeners who are interested in these subjects, and Father Michael Chabrik's books, Aquinas and Evolution.
Thank you for having me.
Catholicism and Evolution. Father Michael, thanks for joining me today. This is Jay Richards with Intelligent Design, the Future. Thanks for joining us.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.